Mario Pfeiffer's two-channel video Again Noch Einmal is a closer look to pervasive racism in Germany. It stages the reenactment of a court case that aroused strong controversies in Germany.
4:20, bitte.
Saxony, East Germany, okay. July 2016. Four men drag an Iraqi refugee out of a supermarket where, they say, is having a threatening behavior against the cashier.
Stell die Flasche hin, nimm dein Telefon.
Once out, they use plastic ties to tie him to a tree.
Ich bin erschüttert.
The entire scene is filmed by a witness, and the video is published on YouTube, where it goes viral. These are the facts that the artist is reconstructing by restaging the scene in a garage, where actors are playing back the entire incriminated facts.
Ihre Bonuspunkte. Do you speak German? Your bonus points here.
Nein, danke.
Ah. To tell the story, Pfeiffer uses two interlocutors as a narrative device.
Do you speak German?
A man and a woman. They are clients among the others in the supermarket.
Was wollen Sie von mir?
And through their dialogue,
wissen Sie, was Sie von Ihnen
as much as the jury that is listening to the facts, get details and different perspectives on the crime. They first meet at the checkout. The man tries to start a conversation and he asks the woman, "Where are you from?"
Yeah, so there are two moderators as I install them in the film, a woman, Denanesh Sude, and a male actor, Mark Waschke, both very known in German TV and cinema. And somehow they are installed in a supermarket setting in which an everyday scene of, you can say it, an ordinary kind of racism takes part. The male character asks the female character where you're from because she's of Afro-German descent. That is giving a certain introduction to the subject of the entire project, that we all in our everyday lives somehow are able to observe or live through an everyday racism. So somehow I wanted to set the tone that this somehow concerns us all, and we might have experienced such a situation in a supermarket from the one or the other side.
These two figures, the man and the woman, accompany us through the entire story. Are you suggesting us, from the beginning, to be aware of their own positions in the story?
Of course, as a visual artist working in film, I differentiate myself from a filmmaker that I somehow do not only follow a story that unfolds, but I also reflect on the conditions of my own production. I cast actors, but I'm also interested in the symbolic means they have, and also, in a certain way, which position they symbolize in a society. I also look as my actors as tools for a larger project. It's not about making a good film with good-looking actors. It's also about who are these actors, what do they stand in for by nature, yeah?
Let's talk about the green-masked figure we see on stage. It's there, but not really. We don't see her face, and I was wondering if it is part of the production apparatus or part of the story itself.
Again, Noch Einmal, the film we are discussing, or the video installation. It is heavily based on a YouTube video that was filmed by an unknown person inside a supermarket documenting the violent attack of four men against an Iraqi Kurdish refugee. We assume it's a female person who filmed that video that went viral on YouTube, because at the end of the video we hear a female voice. We do not see the person who filmed that video and published it on YouTube. Also, all the investigations by the police, by the court, did not reveal who that person is, who filmed the actual video that my film is based on. So the only way to reflect on that and to say, well, there was somebody filming that incident that we reenacted, was to have a person installed in the film set, filming what was going on in front of the cameras from her own point of view. And because you cannot show a person's face if you don't know who that person is, you would need to hide that face. We decided for a chroma green screen bodysuit because, you know, the face and the body is denied. And from a technical point of view, it's the color that you can erase, yeah, through chroma keying softwares. On a symbolic level, it is also the color that you can project on. So if you have a green screen bodysuit in a green screen studio, you can project something on that green color. So somehow we could project technically anybody on that body that sits in a green screen suit, which means basically who is it? It could be anybody.
So, who does know who this person is?
The police might know it, and I'm sure the court knows it. And I think also the cashier knows it. Anybody who was in the supermarket knows that person because she was even greeted in this YouTube video. But nobody came forward to say, this is the person who filmed it. So she would be a key witness. That in itself is a very interesting moment in the entire project, that we have somehow a witness that even like videotaped the whole thing, but nobody knows who she is. And she never came forward and nobody really asked who she is. Why is somebody documenting a scene that didn't even take place then? Because she started filming 2 minutes before the violent attack happened. So she was clearly in a position to film something that she knew was going to happen. But, well, I would assume, and I'm not the only one who assumes that, that this person somehow is connected to the 4 men who committed the attack. Because otherwise, why would you stand in a supermarket filming a ordinary situation, and at the end of the video say, oh, it's a pity that we need a vigilante justice group. So somehow she's even giving a commentary at the end of the video. I would assume that nothing comes by chance and she might be involved in the plan, let's say. And I think her video also should have played a different role in the media than it played out in the end, because it was uploaded 10 days later. And it then, only then, it went viral and the case actually, you know, came about, and there was mainstream media being interested in the case. So it was all based on the video. But it was also uploaded to, let's say, more right-wing political areas than left-wing, you know. You know, it all looks a bit like somebody had a plan and that's, you know, the plan somehow boomeranged in a certain way, but also not really. Because all the media attention that this video created didn't really brought these people into the situation that they were sentenced. It also didn't brought the people to a situation where they were, you know, spoken free. But somehow it created a lot of attention, you know, but attention for what? If there's no result, then it's also very problematic for a society.
He heißt Shabbas Saleh Al-Aziz und wurde 1995 in Sulaymaniyah in Iraq geboren.
If the video had not been uploaded on the internet, the case would not have been of public interest. This is one of the reasons why the judge dismissed the 4 persecutors. But now everything is televised and shared, for better and for worse. How do you approach these found materials and the online platforms that amplify them, both as an artist and as a citizen?
Yeah, I think it's undeniable that social media, which includes YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, are, you know, tools that are heavily used for political campaigning, but also for, you know, freedom of speech, but also for the abuse of freedom of speech. They are also used for manipulating political campaigns. Somehow they are, you know, uncontrollable news outlets, and that makes it extremely difficult, I think, for an ordinary citizen to evaluate things nowadays. Which also means that actually not enough anymore just to speak and to listen. You also need to contextualize what you speak, who you speak to, and what you're listening to, and where is this coming from. So I think that makes it all very, very difficult, and in some areas even very dangerous. So in that specific case, we have, you know, like an amazing witness video that comes out probably of the same network of the people who committed the crime, in my point of view. And nevertheless, the judge is not being able to determine this, you know, evidence and also the authorship of that evidence, because, you know, it's not an anonymous video, of course. It is made by a person that was present, and somehow that person was never present in court. that sheds a very dark light on our German justice system. And then, of course, the video got, you know, at least 50,000 clicks or shares or likes. And it was heavily used in right-wing networks, you know, to publish ideas about civil courage, you know, how people are like taking, you know, action in order to prevent a crime. On the other hand, it also raised awareness amongst leftist networks, NGOs, politicians, and at least in the end, the police and the justice system to say, well, maybe we have to check whether a crime was committed or not. So, I mean, the video was the only evidence people had because anybody who was present in a supermarket seemed to be not bothered enough to call the police or, you know, file a lawsuit. So the video itself proves how important social media is to document things in public space. But it doesn't mean that a video that goes viral, that documents, you know, a violent attack, brings justice to the people who committed it. You know, that's also a consequence of that case.
By presenting the four men as a civil rights group, the witness is already predefining what is going on. In this sense, it's a manipulating propaganda video. There was the intention of turning this ordinary day scene into a spectacle.
She called these men vigilantes justice or like a civil rights group. So somehow she already predefined what is going on. In that sense, it is a, you know, a manipulated propaganda video because she states at the end of the video what she thinks. Again, if you look into the traces who uploaded this video and how it was first shared, and there is a picture being drawn that you can say, well, it was used as a tool to defend civil courage amongst patriots. It was not in favor of the man who was attacked. You know, in my reading, I'm very clear that it was not a video to find the truth. And that's why I say it was a boomerang, because at that moment, people try, including me, tried to find out what was the truth. They labeled it, they proposed one reading of it, underestimating that any visual document might have different readings.
Civil courage and vigilantes justice are easily confused with one another. You've met many right and far right wing supporters. For instance, those you interviewed for On Fear and Education, Disenchantment and Justice, Protest and Disunion in Saxony, Germany. You listen to their perspective and social political concerns. But do you think there is a common ground there, or are they two separate behaviors? I mean, civil courage and vigilantes justice.
In my personal opinion, I think civil courage and vigilantes justice are two very different things. But looking at the society I live in, East Germany, my birthplace, the case of again noch einmal documents how close these terms can get. So whether the woman who documented it calls it vigilante justice and she meant civil courage, because the vigilante justice somehow seeks civil courage because the state doesn't act out the executive power, like let's say the police protecting the citizens. So in rural areas where this case happened, you do not have permanent police presence because, you know, it might not be necessary or there's not enough money to host a police station in every village. However, I think civil courage would have been if somebody in the supermarket would have said, stop, you know, you cannot be violent here. This man is maybe threatening somebody, maybe not. Let's step back, give me the wine bottle, you know, let's de-escalate the thing. Very easy. You know, at least calling the police or saying stop is a duty every citizen should have. And that, in my point of view, would be civil courage. But if you, you know, if four men come with cable binders, literally, in black t-shirts, and these are the wrong premises to act out civil courage. That's like a prepared, you know, action that uses violence and threat to take care of somebody who, you know, might not be able to defend himself. This incident has to be considered in a larger context, and the larger context is there is a foreigner in our supermarket and he's causing trouble, and we don't want that. Because in the larger context of this little village, they were discussing a refugee-seeking home, like a shelter, like a hostel for people to be taken care of, like it happened all over the country. And these four men and many others in that village fought against it. So somehow they used a symbolic situation in order to make very clear, if you bring more people with a migrant history or background or refugee, asylum seeking interest into our village, we will be defending our village, and if necessary, with violence. That's the subcontext of it, no question. So it's not four people against one individual. It's about a part of a society against, you know, another group. It's a village case, but, you know, you could extend it to a country like Germany, but maybe even a continent like Europe.
Creo que se necesita mucho civil courage. Se necesita mucha valentía para enfrentar esto.
Das Land, was mal meine Heimat war, kriegt faschistoide Züge.
More than 25,000 people are believed to have taken to the streets of Dresden and other German cities on Monday for anti-Islamization rallies. The Pegida movement, or Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamization of the West, organized the marches a week earlier.
I'd like to talk about On Fear and Education, Disenchantment and Justice protest and disunion in Saxony, Germany. You have conducted interviews with 9 people, giving them the room to speak. Each one is asked the same questions. Each one is allotted the same media space and time. The speakers remain anonymous, their functions unspecified, but the viewer quickly gathers. Most of them are from Saxony and they helped founding Pegida. All of them share their thoughts on German society today with the camera, telling stories of their disenchantments and insights, their involvement and their hopes for society. How did you get in contact with these 9 persons and how did you win their trust in order for them to speak so openly?
Yeah, I mean, usually I take a lot of time to research my projects. So let's say the part of the production is much shorter than the part of research. And since I deal with people, time is a matter and respect is a matter, but also like a certain openness. I guess somehow the society I work in gives me a lot of space as an artist to like do whatever I need to do. And in a certain way, I would also grant this to the people I work with, meaning that I am interested in whoever doing in whatever, saying whatever. I'm okay if I do a project to listen to somebody for like a long time, and I'm also interested to listen to political opinions that I might not share. But I'm if I decide I'm interested in somebody, I would grant this person total freedom. So I met these people and I was hanging out with them and I was like listening to them more than talking to them. I would say, well, this is the project I propose. I'm interested in your agenda. I'm interested in your ideology. I'm interested in the way you think. I'm interested in your emotions. And I'm interested in how you would like see a better future for our country. And I think in just the minimum respect that I would like listen to somebody who in the past might not had too many encounters with people that want to listen to them, is already like a huge gain for them. It's a huge form of respect. And that is something I also feel in our society, that there is a divide because, you know, a lot of people don't feel like understood, or they just feel lonely maybe, you know. It also depends really on the private situation these people are in. And I felt like, well, maybe it's a good a learning lesson for me to listen to a lot of people. And of course, I went to the houses, we had coffee, we had beer, we had tea, we had cake, we had dinner, we had anything. And I learned these, you know, methodologies like in faraway places in Chile, Brazil, India, to be able to be passive, but very active in listening. You know, it's also fascinating if somebody explains you the world and you're like, wow, I wouldn't think that way. But, you know, it's interesting. And in that sense, I believe I built a very interesting relationship to all these protagonists. I never judged them for what they would say. You know, I made clear that, you know, we shouldn't discussing things with terminologies that are against the Constitution. But beyond that, I'm totally open to anything you have to tell me.
How did you work with them during the shooting? Did you create a kind of open mic situation, or did you work on a fixed format?
It was not an open mic, it was very concentrated, and I all invited them to a film studio. So they all had the same conditions to speak in. You know, it's a neutral, objective space, a little bit of light. But it was also about the framing that we shot with very long lenses in order to show like a person, a human being, despite the political ideas, we still talk about human beings, and these human beings have emotions. And I was equally interested in, you know, their emotions when they speak and how they think and when they blink and when they stutter and when they, you know, move the head and the hands and when they think and they don't know what to say. Because in a political discourse, it's also good to humanize it again, because in the end of the day, these are people, you know, they have feelings, they have kids, they have a partner, they might be divorced. All these factors play into their politicizing speech. So for me as an artist, I can put emphasis on the emotional context of a person, always. That's also kind of maybe my role to say, well, these are heavy political shifts we go through right now. They are made by people, and maybe the society did not treat everybody equally in the past 30 years. And maybe this is an indicator that these people, you know, form a group, and this group is very loud and very strong, and they have something to say. So, in my point of view, it's wrong to ignore them.
You had been invited for a solo show at the Kunstsammlungen in Chemnitz, East Germany, next year, to show Again noch einmal and On Fear and Education. Last August, in Chemnitz, a man was stabbed to death by two men from Syria and Iraq, and the case was immediately instrumentalized, and things escalated so far that around 6,000 people from the far-right wing spectrum demonstrated by shouting against the migrants and saluting Hitler. In the light of these facts, Frederik Busman, the curator, asked you to anticipate the show to next week, early October. How do you feel about the forthcoming opening?
Given the situation that, you know, these works are existing and they also somehow discursively investigate these scenarios, of course I would say, well, yeah, that's a great move. Let's do the show earlier, and hopefully this show will have an impact on the discourse, because now we have a discourse amongst politicians, amongst citizens, amongst the media, and everybody's shouting, and, you know, nobody's really having a vision. Nobody's having an agenda how to deal with that, you know. And I believe that art and the museum can be quite a contemplative space to discuss these things beyond, you know, the structures we already have, which is the parliament, which is the street, which is the marketplace, which is... And I think I can only hope that my projects moderate a certain way that we can only solve these things together. I cannot exclude a group of people that I really, you know, do not share political views with, but I think they are actually part of the society, and they are potentially part of creating certain issues because they have suffered under other issues. So through art, I can only show how a societal discourse could also happen. And if I need to choose a side, I would, of course, choose the side to, you know, strengthen civil courage. So because I think also part of the problem is that these crimes and attacks happen because there is not enough civil courage, because people look away. And I think even the civil society has to take a stand against our justice system if the justice system is not able to differentiate between, you know, vigilante justice and civil courage.